From 2011, when Republicans gained control of the House of Representatives and denied President Barack Obama a governing majority, until the pandemic forced Congress's hand in 2020, Congress enacted hardly any major legislation outside of the tax law President Donald Trump signed in 2017. In the same period, the Supreme Court dismantled much of America's campaign finance law, severely weakened the Voting Rights Act, permitted states to opt out of the Affordable Care Act's Medicaid expansion, created a new religious liberty doctrine, permitting someone who objects to the law on religious grounds to diminish the rights of third parties, weakened laws shielding workers from sexual and racial harassment, expanded the right of employers to shunt workers with legal grievances into a privatized arbitration system, undercut public sector unions' ability to raise funds, effectively eliminated the president's recess appointment power, and halted President Obama's Clean Power Plan. Plus, lest you think that the last decade was a never-ending stream of losses for liberals, the court held that every state must permit same-sex couples to marry, and it held that federal anti-discrimination law prohibits employers from firing individuals because of their sexual orientation or gender identity. The Supreme Court, in other words, has become the locus of policymaking in the United States. The lion's share of the legal changes that have occurred over the last decade were spearheaded not by elected officials, but by the 9 unelected members of the nation's highest court. And with Republicans now controlling 2/3 of the seats on the Supreme Court, the court could potentially sabotage any policy initiative pushed by President Joe Biden. It can also manipulate our voting rights laws to ensure that Republicans dominate future elections. Part of the explanation for the shift in power from the elected branches to the judiciary is that congressional dysfunction fosters judicial dominance. As Professor Rick Hassan explains in a 2012 study, Congress is now nearly 80% less likely to enact legislation overriding a Supreme Court decision than it was several decades ago. Hassan defined the term override to include any successful piece of federal legislation that overturned, reversed, or modified a Supreme Court statutory interpretation holding. Between 1975 and 1990, Congress enacted an average of 12 overrides of Supreme Court cases in each 2-year congressional term. That number shrunk to 5.8 overrides for each term from 1991 to 2000, and to a mere 2.8 average number of overrides for each term from 2001 to 2012. As Congress has grown more partisan and more polarized, Hassan explained, it's become less and less able to form the consensus necessary to override an erroneous Supreme Court decision. Though there are still rare cases where a single political party controls both Congress and the presidency, and the members of that party agree that a particular Supreme Court decision should be overruled, partisanship seems to have strongly diminished the opportunities for bipartisan overrides of Supreme Court cases, in which Democrats and Republicans come together to reverse the Supreme Court. As Congress grows less and less able to enact ordinary legislation, the Supreme Court is more and more likely to become the final word on questions of policy. Hassan's study, however, only offers a partial explanation of the Supreme Court's increasing dominance. Congress, after all, only has the power to override court decisions interpreting or misinterpreting a federal statute. When the Supreme Court declares a law unconstitutional, that decision can only be overruled by the Supreme Court itself, or, in extraordinarily rare instances, by a constitutional amendment. The full story of how the Supreme Court grew into the most important policymaking body in the United States is also a story about partisan polarization. It is a story about how the justices and the men who appointed those justices themselves became polarized.